Hello, I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and welcome to EWTN Live, where we bring you guests from around the world. Our guest tonight is all the way from South Dakota. She doesn't live there now, but that's where she's from. And she is a missionary and alumni team program director for FOCUS. That's the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. Fantastic group that's doing great work for the gospel around the country. Our guest is here tonight to share with us about her friend, her mentor, and fellow FOCUS missionary, Michelle Dupont, who devoted her life to evangelization even in the midst of great suffering with terminal cancer. Now, she died in 2015, and she was officially declared a servant of God after her cause for sainthood was opened 2.5 years ago. On Tuesday, November 12th, the story of her life will be displayed on a theater screen near you for one night only in the documentary called Radiating Joy, the Michelle Dupont Story. Here to tell us more about Servant of God, Michelle Dupont, please welcome Stephanie Anderson. Stephanie, welcome here. So good to see you here.
Great to be here, Father.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you're in that documentary.
I am, yes.
Yes, yeah, I saw a preview copy of it. Tell us just a little bit about the basics, and we'll get into more detail about Michelle.
Sure.
This is something unusual that another pretty young person, she was what, 31?
31, yeah.
When she died.
Mm-hmm.
And why is she having her case brought forward?
Mm-hmm.
What happened with her?
Sure. I met Michelle when she was a FOCUS missionary and I was a student. And so there wasn't necessarily at the time when I met her, other than I was inspired by all the FOCUS missionaries and I mm-hmm. was thirsty to grow in my faith, but there wasn't necessarily a, wow, she is so different. She is levitating. She, you know, she was just your average friend who was wonderful and thirsty to know the Lord.
Yes.
And she went on this journey to be faithful to the Lord, live out her Catholic faith, to grow in virtue. But really why we're here today talking about her is because of the transformation she went through in that last year of her life when she was battling cancer, mm-hmm. suffered immensely, and was faithful and trusted in the Lord during that year. And her sister would talk about how by the end of that year, you couldn't recognize her. She had just changed so much surrender to the Lord, complete trust to the day she died that God could heal her if he wanted to, but God's will was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And through that then, such a witness to the medical professionals, to us who were praying for her and her friends, that by the time she passed away, her funeral was joyful. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. Certainly we missed her, but we believed she ran the race well. And
yes.
we were so confident that she was running towards Christ. And yeah, what a joy to know her.
This is something that comes out in the documentary. On one hand, her sisters talk about how she was, you know, just a regular sister.
Yeah.
They fought, they argued,
yeah.
probably. Those are my clothes. No,
yeah.
but she was the youngest.
There's two younger than her. She's right in the
two
middle.
Younger. She's in the
mm-hmm.
middle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, middle child syndrome, eh?
Yeah.
But she was just a regular,
regular.
Kid.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's an extraordinary quality that did come out, as is true, I think, for the vast majority of FOCUS missionaries.
Sure.
This is, you joined the FOCUS missionaries, and it's a very impressive group. And, you know, even before we explain much more about her, What does focus actually do? Sure. Just so that folks get a context.
Absolutely. So focus is an international spiritual multiplication ministry. So we first started with missionaries on college campuses. So two men, two women, they'll lead Bible studies, and then they'll invite students into a discipleship relationship and teach them how to teach others, teach others to share the faith and to live the faith. And then we've grown. Now we're in parishes, we're working with priests. I am on the alumni team, so all of those who have served as missionaries or were student disciples who are now in their respective jobs as teachers, as doctors in their parishes, we build Catholic community. We help to connect these hot coals who are living out their faith.
Yes.
So the mission of Focus is to be able to teach others to teach.
Because it is something that we don't have great catechesis in a lot of parts of the country. Mm. A lot of folks don't know much about their faith. And there's the issue that Pope Francis keeps bringing up about the need to be evangelized, to come to encounter the person of Jesus Christ and to be changed by him. That's the kind of thing that, again, you can't control the grace of God, but the Focus missionaries invite people to that encounter. That's how she described herself, isn't it?
Absolutely. She was drawing you to Jesus and bringing you to Jesus and then letting Jesus do it.
Yes.
When I was a freshman, I walked into the missionary holy hour that day when they're praying, and I met her after that.
When you say a holy hour, what are you talking
about? Sure. So all of our missionaries every single day go into the chapel for an hour and pray, talk to the Lord. They're reading scripture, they're just meditative prayer, but they're taking time to just communicate with the Lord every single day. We call it a holy hour. So, walked into her holy hour, met her afterwards, and just got to know her. And the first steps of that is just authentic friendship. We just spent time together. I went to events with her. And I remember when the first time where she started talking to me about discipleship and Focus, we have kind of different criteria that would make you a good fit, to be faithful, available, contagious, and teachable. So she's like, Steph, I wanna run to Walmart. Can you run with me? And I was like, absolutely, get me off this campus. And so I hop in the car with her, and we're just chatting about life and having fun, and she kind of dives into this conversation. Stephanie, we've got discipleship and Focus. You've heard about that. I want to talk to you about that. Here are some ways that we think that you're a great fit for that. And I also want to talk to you about how you could grow. I see some areas in you that you need to grow in order to be there. And she wasn't afraid to have those conversations. And you know, in that moment, I could have been like, I've known you for a month. How do you know me? But she communicated it with such love. And I knew her desire for me. She knew this friend she had, Jesus. And she wanted me to know him in that same intimate way. And here's a pathway to do that. And she was inviting me into that and calling me on further. And I remember after that conversation, I was so set on fire. I was like, I want to change. I want to do these things so I can say yes, because I'm thirsty to know the love that she has.
Well, one of the things that struck me is a number of people, her family members, her parents, of course, priests that knew her, Focus missionaries that knew her, and leaders in Focus, all these different folks, is that when she would say something, it was very clear that she wasn't trying to manipulate people. Mm. She wasn't trying to bring them in her control or, you know, get it for her own ego. She was focused enough on Christ that she could say things to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it just made sense, because there was a clean cut here, that it wasn't about, you know, stickiness to her ego. Mm-hmm. It was about, this is a good thing to know Jesus.
Absolutely. It wasn't her standard either, you know. It was the love of her life. It was Jesus who had taught her how to live and what brought her joy. I remember on campus she cared a lot about teaching us about modesty, and I had a friend who didn't hear a lot about that growing up, and she pulled her aside.
Your friend's not alone.
Absolutely. And to be loved in that way, to say, I want more for you. I want more for you, not for my own sake, but because we're made for that, you know? And she understood that, and she believed that. And she did come from, it wasn't like she came out of the womb levitating or, you know, knew the faith well. She grew up in a humble farm family in North Dakota, you know?
They're farmers. That's one of the points. They know how the rhythms of growth work. Mm. They understand, like one character said, you can't say, okay, well, we'll plant this now and we'll just sort of rush job. No, you have to go with the way farming actually is and dealing with the animals, the plants, all that. And she grew up in that, but in a very sounds like a family where their Catholicism was just, that's the way, this is the reality of the world.
Yes.
You know, you got to put the seeds in at the right time for each different kind of plant, mm-hmm. and you got to go to church mm-hmm. and obey God's command. It was just, this is normal life for them.
Yes, and she loved that culture. She went to school for horticulture at NDSU. Mm-hmm. She loved
NDSU is
North Dakota State University in Fargo, North Dakota. And grew up on a farm. She loved it. She, at the time, her family was thinking about doing some wine and grapes, and so she was excited about that and really understood that culture. She would bring us up and call it the Dupong experience. So when she was a missionary, she would invite students to come up to the farm because she loved it. And we would ride four-wheelers and we'd picnic. And there's also this small little church that she loved on their land or near their land, St. Clement's. It's not an active parish anymore. I'm not sure it was the whole time she was a child, but she loved this little church. And so we would go up there and we'd play and goof around. And then we'd go into the chapel and she would give a short little exhortation on running after Christ and we're made for saints. And then we pray a holy hour and then we'd go play games or do a talent show that night and just, you know, have a farm meal together and spend time together. And she loved that. She loved just valuing the time of being together, mm-hmm. but being together centered on Christ, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, she could, it sounds to me as if her family united family love in the context of the love of Christ as the way life is, mm-hmm. and she did the same where she was working as a focused missionary. And then later on, she worked for her diocese.
She did, yes. She worked for 6 years with Focus, and then she worked for Bismarck for the diocese, and she oversaw evangelization. So we actually have some videos from her doing training videos on evangelization, and she wrote some things about evangelization and was just a phenomenal leader. She actually started, it's called the I Thirst Conference.
Yes.
And I don't know how many years they did that, but it was a phenomenal conference where she just wanted people to know Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so she put it on, she planned it, she rallied the diocese around her. It was a beautiful, successful event for that diocese. And so she did a lot of great work before she got sick.
One of the points that the bishop had made when he talked in the documentary is that she came up with this idea, but she did the work.
She did.
You know, it's that it wasn't like, this is a good idea. This is what I usually do. Mm-hmm. I said, this is a good idea. Do any of you know how to do this? Because I can't organize my way out of a paper bag.
Oh, sure.
So, she really understood mm-hmm. how to get things done. She just had it all laid out.
Yeah, she built a team around her. She found speakers. I'm sure she drew on her experience with Focus because all of our missionaries work on our own conference. Mm-hmm. But was able to have she had a good vision, the I Thirst Conference. She had a vision of Jesus thirsting for these souls and mm-hmm. for us thirsting for Jesus and wanting to share that message. And was able to execute. She's a great leader. She wasn't one of those who would steal the show in a conversation, but anybody would rally around her. Mm-hmm. And when it came to anything, I remember she loved talent shows. She loved to have fun at the Newman Centers. And so she got our whole discipleship chain. So all the women who were in discipleship with her, we did this interpretive dance about the resurrection for a talent show, you know, and half the girls were like, I've never danced before in my life, but anything for you, Michelle, you know. So she just had a charismatic personality, a very joyful presence that you just were magnetic towards. And so to do this conference as well, I'm sure it was just people saying, absolutely, Michelle, you tell me what you want and I'll do it, you know.
One of the other things, though, that I also, it was very striking in the documentary. She, is that her life was compared to one of the great Gothic cathedrals. Mm. That the Gothic cathedrals use all these classic forms. I mean, they didn't just make it up out of thin air. They used ways of making arches and stuff, and they adapted arches and, you know, pinnacles and the rest from already existing Romanesque architecture and stuff, and they did that. So and that was in some ways the priest's comparison of her to her life. Hmm. That at this point she was something that used the standard forms of being a good Catholic. Mm. She, while she was working in Bismarck, she also started dating a really fine young man. She really wanted to get married and become a mom. That was something that was strongly on her heart. But the cathedrals also added a desire for brilliant and clarity, mm-hmm. And that brilliance needed to be added beyond the classical forms, and that her suffering at the end of her life was that brilliance that got this process started. First of all, what was the illness that she had?
Mm-hmm. She originally was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. Mm-hmm. So she had been in a lot of pain. She was struggling. They thought maybe it was a cyst, and then when they got in and found it was cancer, then she started having treatments, and it was a year that she from it was the December 29th, 2014 was when she got the diagnosis, and then really battled for her life for a year. And in that year, there were different moments of struggle where there was a moment where they said, you know, we have to take out a lot, Michelle, and we're going to have to take your uterus. And that was so painful for her because she wanted to be a mother so badly.
Yeah, well, not just the physical pain of surgery,
but emotionally. Yeah, absolutely. She wanted to be a mother so bad and to give that up. And she grew up in a beautiful, big family and wanted that as well. And so just had such a broken heart over that, but trusted the Lord. And there was, as she continued on, there was a point where they were gonna have to put tubes in her. And the doctor said, Michelle, you're gonna feel every breath. And she did. She felt every single breath.
They had to put the tubes in between ribs.
Yeah.
So when her lungs expanded to breathe, it caused pain.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. And so that would affect her sleep. That would affect everything. That would affect what she could eat. Or, I remember we did a lot of interviews for the documentary, and got to hear phenomenal stories about different people who got to know her. But a couple of the priests who accompanied her during the year had mentioned as she was struggling, she would talk to the priest and say, "Am I doing this right? You know, like this is hard. It didn't feel good. It didn't feel like she's accomplishing anything. She understood redemptive suffering. She believed in that wholeheartedly, that she was giving her suffering for others so that they would receive grace. But at the same time, am I doing this well? As we would all feel, you know, trying to navigate my own spiritual life while I'm faced with the difficulties of reality.
Mm-hmm. We have a little clip from the documentary. Let's take a look at that now.
Being around Michelle was like spending a day in the sunshine.
I can still in my head hear her say my name and laugh, like I can hear her laugh.
She's a small town girl. She's from windblown prairies. She studied at a large university. She got sick and she passed away after great suffering.
The Lord's using her life, continues to use Michelle's life to impact people.
Watching the All Saints Day Mass to hear a bishop of the church, a successor of the apostle, read the formal decree.
I am initiating the cause of beatification and canonization of the servant of God, Michelle Christine Dupont.
About a friend of mine was just wild.
What she always wanted to do is really happening.
So this is going to be on November 12th, and that's the only day that's going to be in the theaters. And it's about an hour and 15, hour 20 in length. It's not super long. It's called The Michelle Dupont Story. And if you want tickets, you can go to fathomevents.com, fathomevents.com. And their title is Radiating Joy, the Michelle Dupont story. But fathomevents.com will make tickets available. And you find out where you live when they have this available. So that'll be good. And they can do some amazing things at these theaters now. They get things, films and such through the, internet, and it's wild.
Yes.
So they're gonna have that. It'd be well worth seeing. Now, in this, you have her suffering a lot, but one of the elements that goes on is the way she affected the people working at the hospital. Her medical doctor, Dr. Leo, you see him in the film, he wasn't a believer, he wasn't a religious person, but it made a big impact about the way she suffered and what she, the attitude that she took it on.
Absolutely.
Talk a bit about him and some of the many other people. Just the doctor. There was a lot of people affected.
Over the year that she suffered and was in the hospital, she was in multiple different hospitals throughout the year. And so many different medical professionals. And I would say as when you're suffering and you are not comfortable, you are trying to get to a place of like healing. And with that comes, I'm tired, I'm not feeling good, I'm not my normal self. Michelle, in that space, was joyful and was thinking of the other. There are so many stories as people would come visit her in the hospital or she's working with other medical professionals where the first thing she would say is, how are you doing? I want to hear about your life. I want to know what's going on in your world. She'd call down to ask for a meal that day, and she would say, and how are you? You know, in her little gentle, soft voice. Because she genuinely cared, because even in that year that she was suffering, to think about the other, that's what Christ would do. And she wanted to be like Christ.
The doctor was even impressed that she would ask, well, how's your dog?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, she would ask him about his dog and
And
all these different things. And in terms of places, she went for treatment for cancer in Chicago, in Mayo Clinic, of course, more
in Bismarck,
locally.
Bismarck.
She went all over, and they did what they could for her.
Mm-hmm.
But she seemed to help transform them. It's just remarkable.
It's remarkable. You know, till the day she died, she was asked, do you want us to keep praying for your healing? And she would say, absolutely, yes. She believed wholeheartedly that God could heal her at any time. And she loved Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and wanted a miracle for him. And so we were all praying through his intercession for her, and yet had total faith, God, whatever you do, I will eventually be healed, whether it's here on earth or with you in heaven, I will be. Yeah. And she kept that attitude and that faithfulness through that whole year that was such a witness for all of us. I remember in the summertime, they had a ball for her in Bismarck, and she loves dancing. So they had put a throne for her to sit on, and there was a big dance floor. Tons of people came that loved her. We were unsure the day of if she was actually going to be able to show up because she hurt so much. She was not feeling well at all. And she came in, she sat on this beautiful throne they made for her, and there was a line all night long just to talk to her for a minute. And she greeted every single person, held their hands, smiled at them. How are you doing? She knew them all. She was asking them about their own personal lives. You know, she hurt so much and breathing was hard and, you know, she couldn't eat, and yet she cared about every person that walked through that door who loved her and was willing to share her suffering with them and for them.
One of the things about her is that she stands as a counter voice in a society that says, oh, no, no, if you're suffering, we'll help you die. Mm. We'll just get you out of the suffering. You'll be in misery. That's what you think. Mm. Maybe you will, and maybe you'll be in a place that's a lot more painful and a lot less loving than a hospital room. She really lived out the reality that, like you'd expect from someone raised on a farm. I didn't create my own life. Mm. I can't take it. Mm-hmm. But I can live this to my best, even if I'm suffering, and that suffering has meaning. It's not without purpose. And she did so much good for the people around her while she was suffering. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, also offered up her suffering for many others.
She did. She believed very strongly in the power of redemptive suffering and offering her suffering for others, and believing that conversion can happen through giving Jesus that suffering and also surrendering in it. You know, you do want to, I don't want to suffer. I want to get rid of this horrible feeling. But to say, all right, I can't change this, Lord, and you've allowed this, and I trust you. And she just had she was a beautiful witness of trust in the midst of hurting and suffering, not knowing how long it would be or if at any point it could completely change and she would be healed and hoping in that.
Yeah, no, that's something that was very clear. And, you know, the other thing too, that is one of the things that struck me about the way she met people. She helped encourage quite a number of her peers, students at the university and other focused missionaries, to consider their vocations, not only to marriage, but also the vocations to be sisters and brothers and priests. And you saw some of them are on there that they were really influenced by her, and she saw that suffering as something that she offered to help them continue in their ministry.
She did. As we were doing interviews for this documentary, I was blown away by priest after priest after priest and religious women who would say, Michelle knew me before I entered my vocation, and she fostered that in me. She, because Michelle was running after Christ. She believed that wholeheartedly, and she wanted that for each individual, and saw in these souls their invitation and accompanied them, and that her witness to boldly go after Christ gave them courage as well. I was just so many young priests who just were so encouraged by her witness, who are now priests and religious. And there's one religious who talks about she knew Michelle well, as she was also a missionary, and her family wasn't supportive of her going to be a sister. And Michelle was that confidence and that backbone and that voice of the Lord that encouraged her to do it, you know, to say, yes, give your all to the Lord. even though Michelle felt very confident in her own call to marriage and wanted to be married and be a mother and also encouraged that vocation and in those that were her friends who had that call.
See, that element of vocation is also something that is really key. Mm. Marriage is not just, well, if you don't have a vocation, you get married. No, marriage is a vocation. And that has to be, we were taught that back in the 50s. Mm. The nuns, you know, would teach us that. Priesthood and religious life, brothers and sisters, these are specific vocations. To be a deacon, that's a vocation. It's a call from God. And it's not up to us to say, oh, that's good for me that you... No, it's to help people listen to what God is asking of you rather than, oh, this will be good for the family or it'll be bad for the family. It has nothing to do with it.
Of course, yeah.
What does God want? And she lived out her vocation, even though it ended up being, you know, a terrible suffering.
Yeah.
We want to... give you just a little bit more information to find out about the cause for Michelle Dupong. You can simply go to a website, michelledupongcause.org. And Dupong is Dupong. Michelledupongcause.org. And that'll be a way to find out what's happening with that cause. We're going to take a little break. We'll come back in a couple of minutes and take any questions and comments that you might have. So please stay with us. Welcome back. We are discussing a movie called Radiating Joy, the Michelle Dupong story. And I want to invite you to go see it. It will be in theaters one night only. That will be on November 12th. And if you are interested, you can find out where it is and go to find out some tickets by going to fathomevents.com, fathomevents.com. And that'll be a way to, go and see this. It's really nicely done. You ready for some questions?
Absolutely.
Let's start off with Steve. Steve, what can we do for you this evening?
Yeah, I have a question, Father. My question is, why does God allows suffering in a world that denies suffering, for pleasure is what the world strives for. Can joy happen after suffering occurs?
Well, let's take a look in your experience with Michelle. Mm-hmm. We've described she's going through a lot of suffering. Her uterus is removed, her spleen, her colon. I mean, and all these tubes are in her, between mm-hmm. her ribs, mm-hmm. which would be awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult enough when it's in the soft tissue mm-hmm. underneath the ribs. What was she like in the suffering as mm-hmm. you knew her back then?
Sure. You know, Michelle was running after Christ, was living a missionary life, but anybody who knew her during that year that she suffered saw a transformation. And when you open up a cause for canonization, something you're looking for is, do they have magnanimity? Do they have this heroic virtue?
Mm-hmm.
And in that last year of her life, I would say yes. And it's because of her suffering. So I guess when you look at what is God looking at in your heart, what does he want for you? He's looking at your soul. He's looking at how your character and your heart, and something that we can't always see externally, but he can, and he knows what's going to form and what's going to bring you closer to him. Mm-hmm. And through that year that she suffered, as miserable as it was, she did write, I wouldn't change anything. This is the journey and the cross that God has given me, and I want to say yes to what God gave me. And her sister even said, towards the end of that year, when she was home in her last days, there was a radiance about her and a completely different demeanor than you maybe would have even known 10 years prior, 1 year prior, because she had so generously said, I can't change anything. And suffering did that. Suffering took away control from her. Mm-hmm. And she had to surrender, and she had to say, God, I trust you completely. And moment by moment by moment, it wasn't a, hey, I trust you and everything's fine. It was, and now I hurt and I trust you. And now I'm hurting and I trust you. And now, Lord, I'm hurting and I invite you into this. And it transformed how she interacted with the love of her life, with God and with the people around her.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way a number of people who, you know, seek a life without pain and a life of great ease, and in many cases, deadening themselves to pain by using drugs and or alcohol, or they seek great pleasure. I don't think that many of such folks discover a depth to their personality. Mm. You know, that avoidance of entering into pain is a way that keeps them superficial. Mm. And it actually can make them kind of insignificant. It's when somebody goes through difficulties that they find a depth they may not have realized. Mm. And you see that in everyday life. I mean, you know, people who are moms and husbands and wives and dads and doing the normal things of life, it has its struggles, and that's one level, but she was given this depth of person partly through going through a great depth of suffering. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons that God will allow such suffering to go on. We can either use the event to try to deaden ourselves and keep ourselves at a superficial level, or like the famous Psalm 23 says, even though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for the Lord is with me and guides me.
Amen.
You know, this is something, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but the valley of the shadow of death, the gate, some of it, is an actual place. In Arabic, it's called Wadi Kelt. Oh. And when it's down near Jericho, it's just a little dry river bed. But as you keep going in, it's about a 1,200 foot cliff on either side of the valley with a still small stream running from it. And it gives a good example of this. On the height of the cliff and on the sides, almost nothing grows. Hmm. All the growth is in the bottom of the valley. Wow. It's filled with the trees. There's a monastery that the monks built. And they live off of the fruit that's down in the base of the valley.
Wow.
And a lot of times we don't find much growth on the mountaintops, like we don't find it on the top of these cliffs of the valley. The growth is in the bottom, and it's in the depths of the valley, the shadow of death.
Absolutely.
That's not a lesson that we should omit. I don't think Michelle had that lesson lost to her. She grasped it pretty well.
Absolutely. And I think practiced too before she ever knew she was going to go through such a difficult suffering. I think in very small ways she taught us as a missionary, when she was our missionary, about small mortifications or ways that we can offer small sufferings in our life. Mm-hmm. And she did that in small little ways that prepared her to say yes heroically in her last year of life then.
Yeah, I think that that's a tremendous witness in a society that oftentimes keeps itself superficial and insignificant by seeking pleasure and avoiding pain at all costs. Mm. That's not a bad thing to consider. One of the other things too is she's in this process of moving towards beatification and canonization of the saint. What have you been learning about this process yourself?
You know,
because this is your new friend.
Yes, yes.
Going through this.
You know, I've met saints that just through their story, but I've never actually lived with somebody who. I just imagined, Maria Goretti meeting her husband or her kids, mm-hmm. And now here I've met somebody who's going through this, so I've learned a lot. So right now Michelle is a servant of God, and so her cause for canonization is at the diocesan level. So right now they are gathering all kinds of stories. They're gathering anybody who knew her, testimonies about her, anything that she wrote. They're going through all of her writings, all of her video that she made while she was working for the diocese, and just looking through everything to see who she was, what she communicated, what kind of character she had, the testimony especially of the year that she suffered. The most, we're learning about that, and then eventually she'll be a venerable, hopefully, God willing, and then a blessed, and then a saint. And miracles are needed is a part of that process. But right now we hope that she will be a saint, but we don't know. We just know that she has a beautiful exemplary story, and the bishop in the Diocese of Bismarck has opened up this cause to begin to just learn more about who Michelle Dupont was.
Yeah, when somebody is declared a servant of God, people, start sending in reports of, various miracles. And by miracles, we don't mean something like, I found a parking space on Manhattan. No. The church is pretty rigorous.
Yes.
About the miracles that are accepted and the spiritual favors that are accepted. Things were, like I remember with St. John Paul, that there was a nun who was afflicted with the same disease as he, and there's no cure for it, there's none. And she was completely healed.
Wow.
Doctors have no medical way of dealing with Parkinson's. Mm. They can't cure it. They can ameliorate it, but they can't make it go away. And her Parkinson's was completely gone. That would be a truly great miracle.
Absolutely.
And those are the kind of things. Those will come in along with all of the witness from all of her writings and speeches and videos, everything else.
Yeah.
Because another element about a saint is it's very important that the saint teach the Catholic faith. They don't have to know everything of the Catholic faith, but they can't teach error. And that's what the church is very careful about that. And then about the heroic witness. Well, in a couple of days, we'll celebrate All Saints Day.
Yes.
And All Souls Day. But All Saints Day is for all the people who are not canonized. There are a lot of them, quite a few billion, I imagine, by now, who are with Christ in heaven, But they're not going to be canonized. Certain individuals are chosen by God for canonization for the sake of the rest of us to be that beacon for us.
Yes, I have been blown away by the number of people who never met her but have been moved by her story and have all different kinds of needs that they're seeking her intercession for and just asking if she would pray. And there's been a good number of people who have been infertile, which I thought is just beautiful, who have been asking for intercession. And some say, you know, we did this novena and now we've conceived during the novena, you know, and of course, Michelle, having been so broken over losing her uterus and being able to not have her own children, of course, deeply loves these souls, and I'm sure. And so it's just been amazing to hear this woman that I knew who was just, you know, a friend, God willing, is in heaven interceding for all these wonderful things and is a witness praying for so many healings and blessings for people.
Yeah. A couple questions, because you've been involved with this so deeply. How are her parents dealing with all this?
They are the most humble, wonderful, welcoming people. Just phenomenal. Ken and Marianne Dupong still live up in Glen Olin on the farm where Michelle grew up, and her grave is right there, and the church St. Clement's is right there, and they are so welcoming to people who want to share about Michelle's story, and talk about how she's impacted their different lives, and they have just been so. I talked to Marianne today, and I was talking to her about this, and she said, you know, Michelle got us into this, and so she better be praying for us. They are such faithful. They love the Lord. They love the Lord, and they believe that God's going to do what he wants with Michelle's story. And if Michelle wants to keep transforming lives, then they're so excited about that. Mm-hmm. They're just great people.
And her siblings?
Also wonderful, faithful Catholics. Most of them live up in North Dakota, Minnesota area. Some great sisters. One of her sisters, Renee, was the one who really accompanied her throughout the whole year. She was a nurse.
Yeah. She had gone to school and
to be
become a nurse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So she stayed with her in the hospitals
did.
And such.
She did. She accompanied her through that whole year and was just a phenomenal gift to Michelle, you know, in that time of need. And Renee just did such a beautiful job of whatever you want, Lord, I'm here to serve. And so she just has all great stories about Michelle as well. And still to this day, talking about her. And their whole family is just wonderful, just humble, beautiful Catholic family, all of them. Her nieces, Michelle has, I think, a goddaughter, maybe a couple godchildren in that family. Can you imagine having a servant of God be your godmother, you know?
One character I wondered about, in particular, I don't know if you know him, but the man that she was dating.
Sure, Jeff.
Jeff?
Mm-hmm,
yeah. How's he doing with all this?
You know, I think he has been supportive of her story, and he has, I think doing well. I have not personally talked to him since all of this happened. I'm sure it's quite a lot, but I think he also lives in North Dakota, and I'm, you know, difficult as it is to have loved her and gone so deeply in that relationship. He was there at the funeral with the family, and but.
Because, you know, you can understand he would be planning this whole new future with
her
and moving in that direction.
Certainly.
And that's just cut short after a year and being with her in the suffering. So that would be, each person is going to have a different aspect of the way they suffer.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's people. When the young person, well, when anybody dies, you share in that kind of suffering.
You do.
And you bring your own experience to it. So that would that was something that I thought about, because they don't talk a lot about Jeff, but he certainly is mentioned and just was wondering. And one other aspect, you were involved in making this documentary, correct? How did that get started and how did it work?
So initially, Focus wanted to make some short videos on just the character and virtue of being a missionary. And we wanted to use Michelle as an example of that because she was a phenomenal missionary. And so we began to gather some just interviews. It was Trevor and Jess and I. We took a little road trip up to North Dakota and got some great stories. Trevor is a phenomenal missionary who just kind of Googled, how do you make a documentary, you know? And did his best and did a great job. But as we got these interviews, we were blown away by what people were saying about Michelle. And me personally, having known her, hearing all these other people that I never met but were deeply impacted in a similar way. They were, their lives were changed in a way that my life was changed by getting to know her, which was so humbling and so beautiful. So that kind of took a life of its own. Once we began to get more stories, we wanted to make a whole documentary. So Trevor Googled that. He figured out how to make a documentary. We had this beautiful story. And then as that developed, we found out that the bishop wanted to open up her cause. And so then that got...
Did that come from him? From the bishop, that was that starting the cause was for her becoming a servant of God and moving towards being venerable and all. Was that the bishop that started this?
I don't know exactly how the whole process started.
Okay.
But I do think that the documentary then changed to not only her story, but understanding where she is in her cause because he had opened her cause for canonization. And so then we one of our missionary alumni has... I think Anderson Arts, and so he produced what you now will see in theaters on November 12th.
Yeah, and just as another little side point, they opened up the cause. He made the announcement on the Feast of All Saints.
Of All Saints, absolutely.
Yeah, that was just, what, 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this is something, I was fairly young when, you know, we had a lot of excitement that Mother Cabrini was going to be canonized, and you know that her the first American citizen. She wasn't born here, but she's the first American citizen. And then we've been having more saints in this country. This is we think of ourselves, the United States, and as a missionary country, and while the faith is, pretty solidly established in many parts of the country, states like Alabama still are missionary. We're 3% of the state, and that'd be true in Mississippi and northern Louisiana. These are missionary areas, and so, having saints come up in this country, a relatively young country compared to France and Italy, is really a wonderful thing. And to see that there is a young person,
absolutely,
like we have with Pierre Frassati in Italy.
Carlo
Acutis, also in Italy. That there's a vitality to becoming saints.
Absolutely.
That, it's not like some people think, well, I'll use my youth, have a lot of fun, and then I'll settle down. That's not wise.
You're right.
No, that's foolish. Because what you do, if you say, well, I'll just sort of get the sin out and then I'll be good, actually what you do is you build up bad habits that are harder to get rid of when you get older. It's good to start seeking virtue and holiness. So when crises like Michelle's come along,
you have that virtue that to say yes to the Lord.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's a key point. Again, I want to announce to folks the movie is called Radiating Joy, the Michelle Dupong story. It'll be in theaters November 12th, only that night. Tickets are available from fathomevents.com. You'll find out where the theaters are. And you can also go to focus.org /Michelle Dupong to find out more about her. And just also want to mention to you that from now and all the way through to election night and the days following, EWTN News will bring you a lot of insight in the Catholic perspective on what's happening with the election, live coverage on November 5th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and 9 p.m. Eastern Time with additional live coverage. That'll be on November 6th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, so stay tuned with that. And also want to mention that I've started up a YouTube channel called @FatherMitch. It's free. I want you to take a look at some of that. God bless you all and keep you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.